Because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris in this election.
Well, good for her. Though now I'm rethinking my life choices.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Tony.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in Red Bluff and Redding, California on KFOI, and Round Mountain, California on KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallatin, Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, up in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day, even on these sweltering ones. On the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. And yes, it is sweltering out here in Los Angeles. We are now feeling today what the rest of you and the rest of the country have been feeling all summer long.
Yes, lucky us.
Of course, we don't have air conditioning, but that's a different story for another day. Welcome to the Bradcast. I don't want to spend too much time on this first story today because there's a lot that I would prefer to get to, frankly. But given that this news, which broke on Wednesday, underscores directly what I have been trying to warn so many of our listeners about for so long, particularly many of our liberal listeners who have been conned by this stuff coming from Russia and the right, but being sold to them as, some sort of liberal point of view. It isn't. You're being conned and duped by both people who know better and some people who do not. So because of that, I need to sort of at least wave at it here momentarily, Desi Doyen.
Yes, I know.
If only because it is so blatant and so gross and even includes people that we know and that we used to work with, Des.
I know.
So.
It's weird.
The Department of Justice on Wednesday seized dozens of Kremlin-run websites and charged two state media employees in its most sweeping effort to push back against what it says are Russian attempts to spread disinformation ahead of the November presidential election, according to AP. The measures, which in addition to indictments also include sanctions and visa restrictions, represented a U.S. government effort just weeks before the November election to disrupt a persistent threat from Russia that American officials have long warned has the potential to sow discord and create confusion among voters. One of the criminal cases disclosed by the Justice Department accuses two employees of RT, a Russian state media company, of covertly funding a Tennessee-based content creation company with nearly $10 million to publish English-language videos on social media platforms like TikTok and YouTube with messages in favor of the Russian government's interests and agenda, including about the war in Ukraine. The nearly 2,000 videos posted by the company have gotten more than 16 million views on YouTube alone, according to prosecutors, and I actually think that's lowballing it. The two defendants here, Konstantin Kalishnikov and Elena Afanasyeva, are charged with conspiracy to commit money laundering and violating the Foreign Agents Registration Act. The Justice Department says the company did not disclose, this media company in Tennessee did not disclose that it was actually funded by RT, the Russian media outlet, and that neither it nor its founders registered as required by law as an agent of a foreign principal under the so-called Foreign Agent Registration Act, or FARA. Now, if RT, which used to be called Russia Today, now it's just called RT, if RT was a legitimate media source, and many, yes, even on the left, seem to think that they are, well, then why would they secretly fund a supposed news site in the U.S., secretly base it in Tennessee in order to launder Kremlin propaganda on their, for example, their war against Ukraine and so much more? Why would they do that in secret if they were a legitimate media outlet? Say what you wish about RT, but if the facts of this indictment are true, it does suggest they are not an actual media outlet. Or at least not a real one. Moreover, why would they hire American social media influencers on the right to launder those messages for them? Though the indictment does not name the company in question, it describes it as a Tennessee-based content creation firm with six commentators and with a website identifying itself as, quote, a network of heterodox commentators that focus on Western political and cultural issues. For the record, because I didn't really know what it meant, heterodox is defined as, quote, not conforming with accepted or orthodox standards or beliefs. You know, as many both on the right and on the far left describe themselves these days. At least when their beliefs happen to be in direct contradiction with actual independently verifiable facts and evidence to the contrary of whatever their belief may be. In any event, that description exactly matches a company called Tenet Media, which is an online company that hosts videos made by very well-known right-wing Republican social media influencers like Tim Pool, Benny Johnson, David Rubin, and others. And I should note that Dave Rubin used to call himself a progressive back when Desi and I, but mostly Desi, worked with him over on the Young Turks.
Yes.
Where he was a co-host along with you for a while.
Yes, it's true.
And, of course, before he took his hard right turn, once apparently, I guess it became clear that, you know, the right and now Russia apparently pay much better than folks on the U.S. progressive left.
Yes, it was a remarkable and fast transformation.
It was, wasn't it?
It was.
He was a big lefty. Now he's a hard right winger. Funny what hundreds of thousands of dollars will do, because they were highly paid, these people. Millions of dollars, in fact, for producing, you know, a video or two each month, like $100,000 or more for a single video, wherein these folks would say exactly what it was that Russia wanted them to say. Remember, without disclosing that they had anything to do with Russia. It would be one thing if they said, hey, here we are on a Russian media outlet, and here's what I believe. But they would repeat this stuff, not say that it has anything to do with Russia, and then, of course, in hopes that others would then repeat that propaganda on both the right and the left, and so discord among the American public. Stuff like this. Here's right-wing influencer Tim Pool, a guy who was frequently cited and retweeted by no one less than Donald Trump and Elon Musk, etc., in one of those videos.
This is psychotic. Ukraine is the enemy of this country. Ukraine is our enemy, being funded by the Democrats. I will stress this again. One of the greatest enemies of our nation right now is Ukraine. Ukraine is the greatest threat to this nation and to the world. We should rescind all funding and financing, pull out all military support, and we should apologize to Russia.
So I'm sure Tim Pool just happens to feel that way. When you recorded that video, you said he was actually reading from something, Dennis?
Yes, you could clearly see that he was reading from something.
Anyway, does that sound familiar, what he was saying there? Of course it does, because you have either heard folks on the right repeating that exact nonsense, or you have heard folks who have fallen for it as well on the far left. Even, I suspect, on some of the stations that air the broadcast, which repeating the same, yes, literally Kremlin-funded propaganda. So I'm hoping and I'm praying that broadcast listeners have not been duped enough to fall for it. Or if they have, hopefully I'm able to help, I don't know, just a few of you understand how you are being played by these people.
I mean, it is kind of remarkable just how exactly matching their talking points are to the Russian talking points.
Yeah. David Kurtz of Talking Points Memo sort of summarized it all this way this morning, quote, "I'm not sure we're close to getting our collective heads around the malign influence of foreign governments in U.S. elections, even as we are in the midst of the third consecutive presidential election cycle in which it is a significant dynamic. Even if you were to somehow set aside the unprecedented nearly decade-long willingness of Donald Trump and the Republican Party to accept, encourage, and benefit from foreign election interference, it would still be enormously complex, difficult, and hard to combat national security issue." True. The details that emerged yesterday, writes Kurtz, in the new federal indictment announced by the Justice Department, offer an extraordinary glimpse of how brazen Russia's influence operations within the United States have been, and of the extreme gullibility of right-wing influencers who were the highly paid alleged victims of the Russian-backed scheme. Now, I don't think these right-wingers who received millions of dollars were either gullible or victims at all. They made tons of money. They are now claiming they had no idea who was paying them and crucially, telling them what to say. And yet Poole and Johnson and Dave Rubin, and they all immediately took to Twitter after these indictments became public. And it was cute. They said, now that these indictments have been leaked. They weren't leaked. They were released and announced by the attorney general. Took to Twitter right afterwards, all of them, to say that they were shocked to hear that they were being paid millions of dollars by Russia to repeat Russian propaganda, and that they were the real victims here. By way of just one example from the indictment here, remember this from Tucker Carlson earlier this year when he went to Moscow. It seems like years ago, but it was actually February of this year, I think.
Wow.
He went to Moscow to give Vladimir Putin a softball interview, and then he went on to sing the praises of Russia, how wonderful it was, for example, at this grocery store in Moscow, where he found their grocery cart system to be just the greatest and most advanced thing ever, and way better than anything we have here in the U.S.
All right. Here we go. So I guess you put in 10 rubles here, and you get it back when you put the cart back. So it's free, but there's an incentive to return it and not just bring it to your homeless encampment.
This is the grocery cart escalator.
This is designed, I'm figuring this out now, where the wheels don't move, they lock on the grocery cart escalator. Look, Ma, no hands. Coming to a Russian grocery store, the heart of evil, and seeing what things cost and how people live, it will radicalize you against our leaders. That's how I feel anyway, radicalized. We're not making any of this up, by the way, at all.
No, they're not. But Tucker is radicalized against our leaders by what he saw at the Russian grocery store. And as we noted when we played and mocked that video back in February of this year after Carlson had posted it originally, here in Los Angeles, the grocery store chain Aldi has a grocery cart system where you put in a quarter, you get it back when you return the cart, just like that one that he was so impressed with in Moscow. And the Ralph's right around the corner from me has one of those unbelievably advanced grocery cart escalators where the wheels actually lock in place so they don't roll down, if you can imagine such a thing. If you can't, you should come to Los Angeles where you will be radicalized. Radicalized against the leaders in your hometown. Anyway, the Russians behind that Tenet Media website, they really, really wanted their paid influencers to run that video from Tucker Carlson on their fake paid-for propaganda videos that they posted to the site, leading to this paragraph from Wednesday's indictment. On or about February 15, 2024, that would be the day after Tucker published that video, by the way, one of the Russian RT staffers who were indicted shared with U.S. Company One, that would be Tenet Media, a video of a well-known U.S. political commentator visiting a grocery store in Russia. That, of course, would be Tucker. She posted the video in the producer's private chat room that they used on a site named Discord. Later that day, producer one, one of the producers for one of the paid-for right-wing influencers, privately messaged one of the people running this Tenet Media site to say, quote, "They want me to post this," referring to the video that the Russian RT person had posted, but, quote, "it just feels like overt shilling." The other RT person who was indicted said the first person, quote, "thinks we should put it out there." Producer one then acquiesced, responding, quote, "all right, I'll put it out tomorrow."
That was fast.
That was easy. And so they did. Russian propaganda accomplished. As David Kurtz notes at TPM, it helps to remember that the Justice Department has two roles here, prosecuting criminal wrongdoing and thwarting future attacks on the U.S. election system, which is what these foreign interference campaigns amount to. He says, in service of both parts of its mission, the DOJ released highly detailed charging documents that go well beyond what's needed to establish the elements of the alleged crimes. In doing so, it's trying to expose the full extent of the kinds of methods that Russia uses in order to scuttle future Kremlin efforts. One former U.S. official called the charging documents, quote, "an absolute intelligence goldmine." And it details exactly how these schemes work. And in fact, as we have seen over the past two elections, now going on three, they work very, very well, particularly when they lead to not only so-called influencers talking about what a terrible, oh, Ukraine is just horrible, and we owe Russia an apology. Influencers on both the right and the left. And yes, I keep highlighting that point because someone needs to. But also to the entirety of the Republican Party and their standard bearer for president for a third election in a row, who also repeats all of this Russian propaganda nearly verbatim after it's initially put out there by folks like Tim Pool and Benny Johnson and Dave Rubin, who Donald Trump reposts on his own social media site frequently, and as the richest man in the world, Elon Musk also reposts on Twitter and makes sure that just about everybody on Twitter, tens of millions of them, sees what he posts. Anyway, after I was just going to wave at it, I just spent about, what, 19 minutes talking about it.
But I do want to add one quick point of context. So, you know, these videos generally would get you maybe $100 as far as any ad revenue you might get it from it. So they were
If you just posted it on your own to YouTube, right?
Exactly. They were getting $100,000 right. per video. So I think it is kind of surprising that they really are trying to say that they didn't bother to do any real research on who these people were that were offering them millions of dollars.
They had no idea. No, they just thought that
they were just super special.
Yeah.
That's how good they are.
They're the victims here. Anyway, then let's get to the not corrupted Republicans, shall we? Yes, the ones that have been therefore thrown out of the party entirely because they refuse to be corrupted, at least by Russian propaganda and by Donald Trump's embrace of Vladimir Putin. Here's Liz Cheney, yes, the former second highest ranking Republican in the U.S. House, lifelong rock-ribbed Republican conservative, and yes, daughter of Dick Cheney, Dick Cheney. Speaking at Duke University in North Carolina on Wednesday.
Because we are here in North Carolina, I think it is crucially important for people to recognize not only is what I've just said about the danger that Trump poses something that should prevent people from voting for him, but I don't believe that we have the luxury of writing in candidates' names, particularly in swing states. And as a conservative, as someone who believes in and cares about the Constitution, I have thought deeply about this. And because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris in this election.
It goes on like that for quite a while,
yes,
which
does.
Is why I said at the top of the show, I'm sort of rethinking my personal life choices now that Liz Cheney is doing the right thing. But good for her. I do know that it isn't easy for someone like her, and there are far too many cowardly Republicans out there who say, well, I just can't vote for Donald Trump. But I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. I'll write in Ronald Reagan or something like that. If you are really concerned about the threat that Donald Trump poses to this country, to our Constitution, to our very democracy, here's my message to you. Grow up and have the courage to actually help defeat him by voting for Kamala Harris, not for Ronald Reagan. So, good for Liz Cheney. Of course, aside from the national security and democracy threat that Trump poses to the nation, Liz Cheney might also have another reason to support Kamala Harris. As a conservative, Cheney supposedly cares about economic growth. And on that score, as new evidence out this week suggests, the choice for a healthier economy and more growth is also Kamala Harris, at least if you believe those commies over at places like Goldman Sachs. Now, Bradblog.com's own Ernie Canning in recent days has been rebutting a whole bunch of the nonsense coming from Donald Trump and his Republican dupes about the economy being so fantastic, better than anyone has ever seen back when he was president. At least before he screwed up the COVID crisis and the economy plummeted literally like no one has ever seen, at least since the Great Depression. So Ernie, in his most recent piece on this at bradblog.com, headlined "Pre-COVID Trump Policies Didn't Improve the Economy, Increase Job Growth, or Lower Prices," compares, among other things, the first 3 years of the Donald Trump administration, so before COVID hit, to the final 3 years of the Obama administration. And in all of those cases, gross domestic product, job growth, inflation, on all of those measures, the Obama-Biden administration outperformed the Trump administration. By way of just one example here, cited by Ernie, he writes, according to the Consumer Price Index for Urban Wage Earners, known as the CPIW, during the last 3 years of the Obama administration, average prices for urban wage earners rose 2.3%. During the first 3 years of the Trump administration, however, prices for urban wage earners increased 5.74%, more than double the CPIW increase during the last 3 years of the Obama administration. And that's just one example. Moreover, the Biden-Harris administration outpaced the Trump administration on really just about everything regarding growth of the economy as measured by gains in the gross domestic product, job growth, et cetera. And Ernie has also written recently about the wildly popular progressive economic policies that Joe Biden embraced, that Kamala Harris is embracing as well, and the future, the newer ones that she is laying out for her administration if she is elected in November. And yet, Ernie notes, Americans still rate Donald Trump higher for some reason in most polling as to who they trust with the economy. It is, notes Ernie, kind of Orwellian, and both he and I would lay the blame for much of that at the feet of the American mainstream corporate media, who has utterly failed in their primary mission of keeping the American public, the American electorate, informed, yes, including on the wildly successful Biden-Harris economic accomplishments. But maybe they're too busy, I don't know, digging into, you know, how old Joe Biden is, or wondering if Kamala Harris still supports a fracking ban to let the American people know the facts of how the Biden administration compares to Trump, and now how Harris is actually offering economic policies that will help improve the American economy overall. That, as Donald Trump has decided that his nickname for Kamala Harris is now Comrade Kamala, who he and, ironically, right-wing influencers paid by Russia are now calling a communist because I guess they can't come up with anything else. Just go with commie. That always seems to work in the U.S. Just call someone a commie. On Wednesday, Trump posted a video of himself on a social media account that I won't bother to play, so you're welcome, saying, quote, Comrade Kamala Harris is terrible for our country, absolutely terrible. She is a communist, has always been a communist, and will always be a communist. At a re-election campaign event last month, Trump said of Harris that she was a communist and a socialist. And by the way, Trump supporter Elon Musk recently posted an AI-generated image of Kamala Harris wearing a red commie uniform, I guess, and wrote, quote, Kamala vows to be a communist dictator on day one. Can you believe she wears that outfit? Now, of course, it was a fake photo. It was posted on Musk's Twitter, now called X site, even though the rules on that site supposedly disallow misleading images and propaganda like that, etc. But, you know, rules don't apply to guys like Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Well, as USA Today's columnist Rex Hupke quips this week, if Kamala Harris is communist, apparently she's a really, really bad one. At least if you believe those pinko leftist commies over at Goldman Sachs, one of the biggest financial firms in the world, much less the country. As Reuters reports this week, U.S. economic growth would likely get the biggest boost in the coming 2 years from the Democrats, headed by Kamala Harris, winning the White House and Congress in this November's elections, according to economists at Goldman Sachs. Under a Republican sweep, or even with a divided government led by Donald Trump, economic output would take a hit next year, they said, mostly from Trump's vows to increase tariffs on imports and to tighten immigration policies and so forth. The Goldman economist said in their note late on Tuesday, quote, we estimate that if Trump wins in a sweep or with divided government, the hit to growth from tariffs and tighter immigration policy would outweigh the positive fiscal impulse of his continued tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy. On the other hand, they note, quote, if Democrats sweep, new spending and expanded middle income tax credits would slightly more than offset lower investment due to higher corporate tax rates, resulting in a boost to GDP investment. Due to higher corporate tax rates, resulting in a boost to GDP growth on average over 2025 and 26. Moreover, the commie economists over at Goldman said in their report, job growth under a Democratic government would also likely be stronger than under the Republicans. Under Harris, they explained, job growth would be about 10,000 a month higher than if Trump wins with a divided government, and 30,000 higher than with a Republican sweep, according to Goldman Sachs. A Trump win would likely lead to increased tariffs on auto imports from China, Mexico, the EU, that would, oh, look, raise core inflation, according to Goldman. So while Donald Trump has been out there complaining about all the inflation under Joe Biden, which is the lowest in the developed world, it turns out that, yeah, his policies, at least if you believe Goldman Sachs, would actually raise inflation. Of course, they're just one set of economists, right? As USA Today's Rex Hupke notes, the Goldman report comes hot on the heels of a nonpartisan Penn Wharton budget model report. Penn Wharton, by the way, that's Donald Trump's own business school. That report shows that capitalist King Trump's economic plan would balloon the deficit nearly five times more than communist comrade Kamala's. What in the name of Vladimir Lenin is going on here, he asks. Why are some of the biggest capitalists on the planet at Goldman Sachs and Wharton School of Business telling us that a communist dictator in waiting will somehow be better for our economy? Kamala Harris is proving to be the worst communist in history. He says, I'll be honest, I don't know exactly what the words communism and socialism mean, because figuring that out would require reading. And I believe knowledge is a form of liberal indoctrination, he says, but I am 100% sure that Trump, Musk, and other Republicans and sensible right-wing activists who want to ban books know the precise definition of the words they're assigning to Harris and her running mate, Tim Walz. Just listen to what Comrade Kamala was spouting on the campaign trail Wednesday as she touted her communist economic policies aimed at helping small businesses. Quote, we will expand the tax deduction for startups to $50,000. It's essentially a tax cut for starting a small business, she said. We will provide low and no interest loans to small businesses that want to expand, and we will, and this is very important, she said, cut the red tape that can make starting and growing a small business more difficult than it needs to be. What the heck kind of commie talk is that? Asks Hupke. He says, it's workers of the world unite, not small business owners of the world succeed with low interest government loans. Comrade Kamala is clearly not just a failed vice president, as Trump has said, she's also a failed communist who would help grow America's economy with sound worker friendly capitalist policies. No way I'm voting for that kind of incompetence, he says. So if Harris and Walz are definitely communists, I should be afraid of, then the only logical conclusion from the Goldman Sachs news is this. Harris and Walz are absolutely terrible at being communists, and that's pathetic. Comrade Kamala is clearly not just a failed vice president, as Trump has said. She's also a failed communist who would help grow America's economy with sound, worker-friendly capitalist policies. No way I'm voting for that kind of incompetence, concludes Hupke. But maybe that's why Liz Cheney, yes, Liz frickin' Cheney, now is voting for, well, Kamala Harris. Let's take a quick break, and we will get to some track condition news for this election. Yes, the GOP's got a whole lot of voter suppression going on right now, and they are threatening to, at the same time, shut down the government again if they can't do it. Also, Desi Doyen will have our latest Green News report today. All of that is coming up. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to the Bradcast, Commies.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning.
Oh, goodness.
No one could be sweeter than my sweetie when I meet her in a morning.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We will get down to Carolina in just a moment. But when Congress returns from its summer break on Monday, lawmakers will have, here we go again, just 3 short weeks to figure out how to keep the government doors open before funding for the federal government expires on September 30. Yep, Republicans are threatening another government shutdown again, and this time right before a presidential election, which is really smart. Because apparently Donald Trump is telling them to do so.
Aha. So they get to hold some more hostages, it sounds like.
House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, has a plan to deal with all of this, however. He will extend current funding through next March. That's a so-called continuing resolution. Simply continue the current spending levels for now. And he will avoid a Christmas time standoff or a messy spending fight just ahead of the contentious election with this plan. To do that, to get that continuing resolution, to agree to punt it down the road until March, Johnson is proposing that Congress pass a bill in exchange that would require people to prove that they are citizens in order to register to vote this year. It's a proposal that President Joe Biden has already vowed to veto, arguing it's already illegal for non-citizens to vote in federal elections and that the proposal would make it harder for Americans to register to vote, which is, of course, the whole point, Joe. The bill in question is called the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or SAVE Act. It was passed in the GOP-controlled House back in July, but is dead on arrival at the U.S. Senate. It would be vetoed in any event by President Biden. But now Johnson is threatening that, well, if we don't pass that bill, he may not allow the government to continue operating until March. He might just let it shut down because Donald Trump apparently thinks this would be good politics for him before the election. Good luck with that, Donnie. Now, I think he's very wrong, but in any case, Republicans all over the country, but particularly in battleground states this year and, you know, just within the past couple of weeks, have been out there pretending that there is this massive problem with the voter rolls, that there is a massive problem with non-citizens voting, even though there isn't any evidence to support that claim, and they are using it to try to prevent certain voters from being able to vote at all this November. But that's not all they're doing with this scheme. I'll get to that in a moment, because we are seeing similar efforts in states like Arizona and Georgia, but I want to focus for the moment on North Carolina here, as this is one of the battleground states that has gone to Trump in the past two elections, but is now, according to pre-election polling, apparently back in play for Democrats this year, and apparently it's kind of freaking out Republicans. Yes, the state was in fact won by the Democrats, by Barack Obama, as recently as 2008, but it's gone to Republicans ever since, but that could now change. So, according to WRAL in Raleigh, state and national Republican Party leaders are suing the North Carolina State Board of Elections again, days after the board had criticized GOP leaders for filing a different lawsuit based on what the board called, quote, categorically false allegations about the potential for voter fraud. So last week's complaint is the second lawsuit making election integrity claims that GOP leaders say call into question whether large numbers of immigrants are illegally voting in North Carolina. Who knew? Echoing the false claims by former President Trump made in the 2016 and 2020 elections. State elections officials say the GOP's claims are based on a skewed version of the facts and that the lawsuit's proposed solution is itself unlawful. So 2 weeks ago, the North Carolina Republican Party and the RNC, the Republican National Committee, who are also behind this second suit that was filed last week, they filed a separate lawsuit on a similar theme about immigrants signing up to vote. The State Board of Elections said at the time that the claims in that first lawsuit, quote, undermine voter confidence on an entirely false premise. Now, it's a because there's a Democratic governor in North Carolina, the Democrats have a majority on the State Board of Elections there, but it's a 3-2 majority, and the board decided this stuff unanimously, pushed back on what the Republicans are doing here. 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans pushed back unanimously on this. Now, the new lawsuit claims that nearly a quarter of a million people, 250,000, were allowed to register to vote in North Carolina without proving their identity. It asks for a federal judge to potentially order the state to revoke all of those people's registrations, voter registrations, making them ineligible to cast a ballot in the 2024 elections, which is just weeks away, unless they now re-register again in the next few months. Now, I will note for the record here that vote-by-mail voting begins for the presidential election in North Carolina this weekend. It's the first state in the nation to begin any type of voting, vote-by-mail in this case. And I will also note that Donald Trump won that state back in 2020 by less than 75,000 votes. And now Kamala Harris appears to be up over Donald Trump in North Carolina, if you believe the pre-election polls, by anywhere from 1 to 3 points, depending on which poll you look at. So now Republicans suddenly want to purge 250,000 voters from the rolls. A spokesperson for the elections board told WRAL that the solution that the lawsuit, the second lawsuit, is seeking to remove those voters from the rolls is illegal because it's now so close to the election. So even if they won, even if they agreed to this somehow, they couldn't do it because it would violate federal law. In fact, the National Voter Registration Act disallows mass purges of the voting rolls within 90 days of a federal election. And in the case of North Carolina, mail-in ballots are already going out and early in-person voting begins in October. So, yeah, we are well within the 90-day restriction on mass purges of voting rolls, even though their particular complaint here, their specific complaint about the voting rolls in North Carolina, they have known about for months and months and months, but they only waited until now for some reason to file it. Elections Board spokesperson Pat Gannon told the media outlet WRAL, quote, the lawsuit is asking for a rapid-fire voter removal program that violates federal law. The Republican Party leaders claim in their lawsuit that some of the people in the voter database do not have any sort of ID attached to their voter registration. And without, you know, information like that, they could be illegal immigrants illegally registered to vote, although the lawsuit offers absolutely no evidence whatsoever of any such cases. Specifically, the Republican lawsuit claims that 225,000 people in the state's voter registration database were allowed to sign up to vote without providing their driver's license or the last 4 digits of their Social Security number in violation of the Federal Help America Vote Act, or HAVA. Now, that's pretty bad. 225,000 people, right? Sounds terrible. And in fact, the Board of Elections has acknowledged that some of those people, in fact, do not have IDs attached to their voter registration. But here's the deal, and you knew there was going to be a deal. Here's the deal. Gannon of the State Election Board said that HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, only became law in 2005. So many North Carolinians had registered to vote before 2005, when the rules did not apply that you had to attach some sort of a driver's license or the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. So none of this is a surprise. This has been in place in North Carolina since 2005. And let me check my notes here. Yes, it's 2024. So that's, what, 20 years they could have complained about this? And they're only just doing it now? Let me check my notes. About 60 days before the 2024 presidential election. Earlier this year, a right-wing election integrity activist filed a very similar complaint against the elections board regarding HAVA and the voter database. The elections board members, comprised of three Democrats and two Republicans, voted unanimously to dismiss her complaint as being unfounded. As for the GOP lawsuit over the alleged HAVA violations, Gannon added that even if someone did slip through the cracks and somehow registered to vote under a fake name by never providing a driver's license or Social Security number, there's also now a failsafe in place in North Carolina, and that would be North Carolina's voter ID laws, which they have been allowed to put back in place and which now require voters to show proof of identification when they go to the polls this year. So even if they didn't have an ID when they registered attached to their registration file, all of these voters will be asked to show photo ID when they vote this year, according to Gannon. So the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, a Durham-based civil rights group, criticized the recent lawsuits as a cynical ploy by Republicans to set the stage for Trump and other Republicans to try once again to overturn the results of the election if he loses.
Bingo.
In a statement co-signed by local Hispanic and Asian political advocacy groups, they accused the Republican Party of, quote, an insidious national effort to spread anti-immigrant conspiracy theories in hopes of short-term political gain, which it said this lawsuit is only one small part of. And that is true. I suspect you have heard, because these are now happening all over the country, these claims, hundreds of thousands of voters may be non-citizens and they're in the voting rolls, even though nobody has any actual evidence of that. That may be the case, and they may be preparing to steal our elections with non-citizen votes.
Well, you know, that way, you know, the public might see a headline and think, oh, there's some smoke there. Maybe there's also
fire
there too.
225,000. There's got to be some. Anyway, this is part of the Trump GOP plot that Desi has described this year as suppress the vote, contest the vote. It doesn't actually matter if they win these lawsuits. In fact, they know that they will not win these lawsuits. They know that federal law will prevent the purging of some 225,000 registered voters this close to an election, no matter what. But they are filing these lawsuits anyway. Why are they doing that? Well, quote, the RNC is not filing these lawsuits because they think that they will win. They are filing these lawsuits despite knowing that they will lose, the voting rights groups argue. The RNC, they say, intends to use those losses to amplify baseless conspiracy theories about how the election is being stolen and that the courts will not stop it. This lawsuit, they say, is part and parcel of that effort designed to undermine confidence in North Carolina elections. And of course, in elections across the country, in the event that Donald Trump loses again and they need to try to steal it again in Congress on January 6th, they will be able to point to all of these lawsuits that see the courts just blocked us. We were trying to save the election. We were trying to make sure that there was election integrity, that immigrants didn't steal the election, but the courts just stopped us. So therefore, Congress needs to step in. So it is why I am calling this part of the election, in any event, from now until polls close on election night, I'm calling it phase one of this year's presidential election. With phase two to follow, God help us. Shortly thereafter, I suspect. Anyway, take a quick break. Green News Report is up next. I am Brad, and this is the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks. Welcome back to the Bradcast. I don't want to be a whiner, Desi Doyen, but I'm looking at my iPhone here, and the says the temperature is 101 degrees where we are. Yeah. Now, and I know that, you know, most of the country has gone through
extreme heat
all summer long, and we're just now getting it for the first time. But I do want to add that, you know, when we're doing the show from our studio, we have to close all of the windows and the doors. And we have no air conditioning because we live in L.A. and we usually don't need it except for about, I don't know, maybe a week or two a year.
And we're in that week right now.
That happens to be this week, as discussed in our latest Green News Report.
Communities downstate are experiencing even higher humidity, and it's all thanks to the corn.
Most humid summer on record in the United States, intensified by Midwestern corn sweat.
What?
August 2024 was the hottest August on record globally. Plus, Brazil's Amazon rainforest saw a record number of wildfires in August.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If you think it's muggy here, be glad you're not in Central Illinois.
I'm always glad I'm not in Central Illinois. Oh, inappropriate Central Illinois slam. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I feel I owe an apology to Central Illinois. I actually spent quite a bit of my childhood out there, and yeah, it's really muggy and horrible, but other than that, a delightful place.
Oh, glad to hear it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, summer ain't over yet.
Oh.
An extreme heat wave is now striking across the western U.S. So no one should be surprised that August 2024 has effectively tied 2023 as the hottest August globally since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s.
I'm surprised.
That's according to Europe's climate service, Copernicus. 2024 is now virtually certain to clock in as the hottest year on record.
A broken clock.
All that global heat has intensified wild weather across the entire planet, from torrential rains and floods to record-shattering extreme heat and wildfires. In Brazil, even though deforestation of the Amazon rainforest has dropped dramatically with the election of President Lula, sadly, the region just recorded a record number of wildfires in August, according to government data, due to the heat and a record persistent drought that has reduced Amazon River flows.
You can't win in Brazil. Next thing you know, they'll be cutting off Twitter down there.
Scientists at the World Weather Attribution Service found that human-caused climate change supercharged unprecedented wildfires across Brazil's Pantanal wetlands, making the fires 4 to 5 times more likely. And if this summer felt hotter than normal, you're right. Preliminary data indicate that 2024 was likely the most humid summer ever recorded globally. Sweltering conditions pushed the heat close to the limits of human survivability in some countries. Scientists say the observed long-term increase in humid heat is driven by man-made climate change because a warmer atmosphere holds more moisture.
Go figure.
The U.S. this summer saw heat waves every week, and large parts of the nation notched their hottest summer on record, including Phoenix and Las Vegas. The intense heat also fueled torrential rains and floods, like the deadly flash floods that swept through the Grand Canyon last week and floods in Texas this week. And Phoenix is not done yet. Phoenix is setting a new heat record every single day, with temperatures at or above 100 degrees for more than 100 days straight and counting, with no end currently in sight, according to the National Weather Service.
Impressive. horrible, but impressive.
And more than 55 of those days have been above 110 degrees, itself also a record. It's by far the longest streak on record for Phoenix, nearly a month longer than the previous streak set back in 1993. Soaring late summer temperatures have prompted some Midwestern schools to close early or cancel sports practices. Also in the Midwest, corn sweat is making the humidity even worse.
What the hell is corn sweat?
Well, corn sweat is literally corn plants cooling themselves by releasing water vapor into the air through evaporation, intensifying local humidity.
I grew up in the Midwest around a whole lot of corn. I never heard of corn sweat.
And now you have. Agriculture scientists say as temperatures rise due to climate change, 90 million acres of corn across the country will pump out even more corn sweat, adding to the steamy misery. Ironically, more than 40% of corn grown in the United States is turned into biofuels, which also contribute to planet warming emissions. And as many climate scientists have repeatedly noted, summer 2024 is likely to be the coolest summer of the rest of our lives globally.
So you tell us all this horrible stuff about how hot it is, and you say this is going to be the coolest ever?
Yes, but there is a bright spot of better news.
Good.
Nearly all new power plants built in the United States this year are zero carbon. That is a new record. An analysis of federal government data found that 97% of new generation capacity built this year is carbon-free solar, battery storage, wind, and nuclear projects, and 80% of that is just solar and batteries.
Thanks, Joe Biden.
The researchers say, however, that power sector emissions are not falling fast enough in the U.S., and the pace of deployment needs to accelerate.
Thanks, Joe Biden. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thanks for all the lovely delight I found in your embrace. I'm thankful, though I know it's ending all too soon.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. I know I said at the beginning of the segment here I don't like whining. I also don't like begging, so please don't make me beg. But while you're at bradblog.com, please consider hitting one of those donate buttons to help us stay on your public airwaves. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. We rely on you. Thank you in advance. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here next time. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
And thanks again for taking me on the road to paradise. We lost our way, but still I must convey my thanks.